What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strong Towns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strong Towns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action, using and understanding open data. Now, before we dive in, we need to answer the obvious question that I'm sure many of you, myself included, are asking yourselves. What the heck is open data? Open data means making data, in this scenario, our local government's data, freely available for everyone to use and republish as they wish. And it can look something like this. Say you've been gaining some big time wisdom from reading the Strong Town site. Say how parking minimums fill our main streets with empty, useless space. So you decide to step out your front door to see if these lessons translate to where you live. Sure enough, they do. And you have the observations and anecdotes to make your case. Now get this. With open data, you can make a data-driven pitch that much of the parking is unnecessary and use that data to convince your council person that they could use the space for more productive, tax-boosting uses. In this episode, I've got three guests and open data wizards, Kyle Taylor, Jesse Hamner, and the homie Habib, who've advocated for and implemented open data in the city of Denton, to share their wisdom with us, including how you can use open data to act on your ideas, how you can encourage your elected officials to adopt open data policies, and most important, how open data can make your city or town stronger. Enjoy.
Kyle, Jesse, and Habib. What's good, y'all?
Doing good.
All right.
Doing all right.
Happy to hear it. How's life in Denton?
Couldn't be better. I mean, I'm kind of enjoying the mild weather we're having, but that's okay.
Ups and downs every day.
So, listeners, this is one of the rare instances on It's the Little Things podcast where I have the luxury of actually sharing a room with my guests. And so we got some great leaders on the podcast today. We got Kyle Taylor, one of our great neighborhood leaders, a local pioneer in open data, one of the topics that we're digging into today. We got Jesse, another great advocate for Denton, working over at Bloom Reach in Dallas. And then lastly, the homie Habib, another great local pioneer in smart cities and trying to get the city involved locally. And we got some great stuff to talk about today. The action we're going to focus on is using and understanding open data. And fellas, I can't think of a better group to have here to knock this out together. This is going to be fun.
This is great. I'm glad that we have three diverse people that we can all contribute something to this to this podcast.
And some experience in having done this.
That's true. Yeah, we have a couple of years behind us.
So guys, to get us started, what the heck is open data and how does it relate to how our cities and towns work?
I'm going to let Jesse start with this one.
Sure. The idea is cities take in tax dollars and produce information, and oftentimes they don't have a good platform to share it with the constituents, or they don't make it available in ways that are helpful for people to use on their own or mash up with other data sets. And it is becoming a world where data can influence policy, and therefore the idea is we should share the data that the city gives us, and we should do things with it to influence the city's policies, to evaluate the city's policies, and push forward into issues that matter to us with the backing of information.
If I may add as well, please, the difference between the open data and the reports that you receive from cities or cities published all the time and government publishes all the time is those reports are well-managed, well-organized, been reviewed and over-reviewed multiple times for many purposes. And here we are talking about data that's just extract from the city software or the government agency software. So it's not overlooked. It's in the raw format. You can take it to reproduce and take it to build something, or just to make it in a layman term, use it like Google Maps and all the traffic information, all the insight that you get using those applications just from open raw data. It's not reported, it's not aggregated, it's not collected together. Yeah.
One thing Jesse mentioned is that he was primarily talking about city data, but, you know, open data is really any data that's available to us, whether it's coming from our city, from our state, from our counties, from our, you know, national government. You know, it's in some aspects we are taking other sets of data from not just the ones that we're primarily looking at, say, our city data, and enhancing it in a, further. By merging pieces of data together. So in this aspect, it's really anything that we can get our hands on in order to build something that serves a purpose.
Yeah, it's an outgrowth of the academic tradition where you have to share your data and your results in order to have people verify it, to look over your shoulder and say, we agree what you found is reasonable and these findings are interesting, or you made a mistake here in step two, everything you said is false. And so the openness of data is so that we can evaluate it for ourselves. It is it is an outgrowth of the academic objectivist ideas.
And that's essential for how our cities work too, because it keeps them accountable of, like, you know, making sure the balance sheet is public and that every line item is for our citizens as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go digging through all the decimal points, but yes.
I hear you. So what gets me most excited about open data in relation to strong towns is we use this term called strong citizens. Mm-hmm. These are the folk who, you know, have bought into the strong towns concepts and they want to go out and do what they can to make their own neighborhood stronger. You know, these are the folk who are walking down their block, maybe with the iPhone or taking photos and, you know, making observations of how they want to make their streets safer, or slow the cars, whatever it might be. For these folk, how can they use open data to start to act on these ideas and observations that they're making?
So I'll start off with the reason why I got involved with open data. And it was because one of our previous local city councilmen, who you're also familiar with, is Kevin Roden. He was part of Code for America, not directly, but indirectly in most aspects, which is a national organization that's kind of like – it's like the Peace Corps for developers. Hmm. If I could put a term around, it's like the Peace Corps for developers, where they go around and they use their skills to support cities to build technical infrastructure for things that they might have previously had. And I met him in town because I was working on an open data project and I caught wind that he was very involved in like the local political scene, and he was always trying to engage people more in the, you know, local politics through technology. A very simple aspect of this, or a very simple example, is that some people didn't know what district they were in and who they were voting for.
Wow.
Right. And so I remember talking to him about this, and I was kind of involved in the startup community and doing hackathons at the time. And he was like, man, we should really just get a bunch of people together to see how we can fix this problem through technology. And so Kevin held a hackathon at his house one night. About a dozen of us showed up. He bought the beer. We brought our laptops. And there was, you know, a couple of us working on like Google Maps API. Some of us were working on KML files for doing district redrawing. Some of us were extracting GIS data that we're getting from the city. Some people were working on designs. Like, they weren't even technical. They were just trying to, you know, make the website look good. And we did it all in about 4 to 6 hours. Where basically we stood up a website. I think it was just votedenton.org or something like that. And you could go on and there's a simple box where it says put your address in. We put in your address and then it shows you what district you're in. It highlights it on the map and then it tells you the candidates who are running in your district. It was such a simple thing because most people might not have either followed the local news about it or just not involved in general. But it was such a low-tech thing that a couple of very passionate people who wanted to support the community got together and just figured it out. So,
and it was super practical because precincts are small. And you may drive by a precinct voting location that is not yours on the way home. And you may go to the wrong place, stand in line. Oh, this is not where you go. And then you get frustrated and go home.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's totally practical. And the Google Maps API does a pretty good job with address matching. And so there you go.
Yep.
And then votedenton.org, that's still an existing site, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Votedenton.com?
Maybe it was .com. It was one of the two.
I feel like I've used it to find my own precinct recently.
There were a couple of things that were, you know, that didn't exist at the time. But another example is we whenever we were starting off really kind of getting a open data community together here in Denton, is that we wanted to figure out, you know, kind of like crowdsource what the problems people mm-hmm. were seeing in the city. So we started a campaign called Listen Denton. And so you could go to, at the time, you could go to listendenton.com. And it was really simple. It was a one-page website, had a form on it that said, you know, what are the problems that you see? How would you fix them? It's like, what is your suggestion on how you would fix them? And then give us your name, email optional, and then your zip code. So at least we know what area you were in. And what we did, I think we got around 150 responses just over the course of a week. And we took all of those responses and kind of filtered them down into common patterns. And of course, the number one issue that we had was parking, was like downtown parking was mm-hmm. an issue that everyone had always complained about. But there were a few other ones. One was like, you know, there was no way for anyone to tell the city something was wrong. Like, oh, there's a tree knocked over in the street down Oak Street, or, you know, there's trash cans or trash barriers somewhere blocking, a way. And, you know, we kind of filtered this list down into something that was kind of manageable that we could present some kind of technical solution or at least start brainstorming what we can do to start fixing these problems. But, you know, it really just starts with collecting data from the people to see what they mm-hmm. see as the problems. And then what we can do is take the data that's available to us and see how we might be able to, you know, intersect those into a solution.
That's so wonderful, Kyle. Let's dig into data transparency. Because I imagine many of our listeners have had similar ideas. You know, they make an observation. They want to see what data exists to have more grist for the mill for their argument. But once they email their council person or email the city manager, they find out that that data is locked away and they will not have an opportunity to dig into it. Why is that? Why do cities tend to kind of lock away this data that their constituents want to dig into?
I think it's not just locking away data. They're occupied, to be honest, with many things to do as well to provide the service. Then if you ask for it, and you will be surprised that companies who actually use these data in a way always ask for it. They always get the data in the format they like, the way they like, the frequency they like all the time. But for the layman person in town, it's too much to ask. Then you need to submit and file. Even if it's online, you still need to submit a request for public data, and you need to identify it very well, and you need to know what you're asking for. So it's type of not as easy. Then sometimes they will not provide you with the data in the same format, so it will be PDF.
Which is unusable.
Then you end up with the frustration, and you say, okay, I'm not doing this, or this doesn't matter. But when you have Open Data Portal and you have the data available in the raw format without even going and asking somebody, you just can go on the website, try to find it, locate it from a search, and you're done. I think that's a great motivation for you to do something with it.
Wonderful. So this is a great segue into, you know, how do we pitch this concept of open data to local governments? How do we get them to buy into these different kinds of policies and really help them understand the benefits of, hey, if you give your constituents access to this data, they can help you make your town more financially solvent?
One thing that I'll start with a small example. You said, Kyle said, Peace Corps for developers, you know, Code for America. And other people do Open Data Day differently than this, but my take on it has been Habitat for Humanity for developers, right? Let's go do something that benefits our communities mm-hmm. that may not be top of the priority or may not be something they even know you can do. Because sometimes, you know, I mean, I'm a programmer, right? Sometimes people walk in and say, hey, I want to be able to find where I can vote. And 6 hours later, you've produced something that looks like magic. Hmm. And we last year saved the Denton County United Way homelessness leadership team about 30 or 35 hours a month by doing some Python. They had to just figure out, they go through and manually look for people who had fallen off the list and who were no longer homeless or whatever. And, you know, that took a lot off their plate.
Yeah.
And that's one small example. And that's, of course, not related to the cities. But I think for the cities, you pitch it as you have a bunch of smart people here. If you want more people to move here who are smart, engage mm-hmm. with the people who are saying, hey, you know what I would like? I would like for my data to, I'd like to know more about this. And we had a great example at Little Dock of a couple days ago, the Open Coffee Club for techies in town, talking about, I hadn't thought of this and it was a great idea and I'm going to pitch it at Open Day today. So, you know, we'll have to see. It was about, the kind of reverse war driving and crime. Very cool. Yeah. We'll have to see.
I think it's showing small, successful projects with like meaningful outcome, but you need to find a way to show cities this and collaborate with them in order to like measure success, mm-hmm. right? So for example, a friend of mine, Matt Taylor, had made this website. He lives down in Mansfield and he could never remember what day his trash trucks came, right? And there were apparently a lot of people in Mansfield who also didn't know that. And so either you're, you know, searching online for on a city website or you can't find it, or you're calling the, you know, waste management department. Hey, you know, I live in this neighborhood, you know, what day I run. So he just made a website that's called When's My Trash Day? And you just put in your address and it says, oh, your trash day is Wednesday, right? And it's just one simple small thing. Now that is a cool thing to do. But if you could now work with the city and say, hey, how many calls were you getting before? People asking mm-hmm. about how many or, you know, what day their trash day was. And now, ever since the site gone up, what if we just promote it a little bit? Let's measure the call rate on that same topic and see if it decreases.
Because you know they keep those calls. They keep logs of calls. Yep. So you can already count that.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't spend any money. This guy who was just frustrated and wanted to use the data that you had available in order to make a tool. And so I think that's where, you know, you have to start with these projects that are just kind of impactful in small ways and show the cities that, you know, these are things that we can do to help our citizens. Yeah. So let's work together and let's make it better for both of us.
Yes, you know? You're exactly right, man. And something that Strong Towns talks about a lot is just, let's not commit to these big transformative projects. Let's not put all of our eggs in one basket. Well, it's just a small bet we can make and then measure it and iterate from there. I love that, Kyle. So for listeners, they're buying into this idea of open data. We talked a little bit about Open Data Day. How can they start to form this tribe locally to actually make an Open Data Day happen where they live?
I guess we should just talk about what Open Data Day is in general.
True.
Right. So Open Data Day is an event that was started by the Open Knowledge Foundation, I believe. And it's just, it's kind of like your favorite, you know, like those arbitrary favorite holidays, like it's National Pancake Day or something like that. It was started kind of like that. It's International Open Data Day. It's always the first Saturday of March. And so we had started it here. Jesse and Patrick had started it here a couple years ago where they just wanted to talk about what is open data and how do we use it correctly, like effectively.
Data literacy, because that's one of the things that, you know, how do I use data? What do I do with it? So we kind of started down the workshop path and it didn't work well. Nobody wants to be lectured at for 8 hours and then call it a good day. Because you come in not knowing. And so we changed tack and we said, all right, we're going to recruit all the nerds we know who can sling Python or GIS or something and say, y'all come pick some topics to focus on and do what you can in one day and turn people's creativity loose and their technical skills. Things happened I couldn't have foreseen. It was wonderful.
Cool.
Great harnessing of lots of different kinds of talent. It was great.
Love it.
Yeah. And the great thing about Open Data Day is that you don't necessarily have to be technical, right? It requires all types of people. I mean, technical people can obviously take the data and transform it in a way that can produce like some kind of application, right? But you have people who are taking the data and using it for non-technical things. A great example is that City Denton had opened up a new data portal that we could access, but no one knew how to use it, right? So you go to the website and you see all these data things, but there are no labels on things, you know, and while you could download Excel sheets or CSVs or whatever, no one really knew how we could use the interface of the website. So we had a group of librarians, actually, right? And they were like, well, we need to...
The kings of all data.
So we need to train people on how to use this. So their solution was, we're going to make a series of YouTube videos that we can put up walks them through the data portal and shows people how to use it, whether you're a technical person, a non-technical person, a standard citizen that maybe you just want to, you know, dig into data and read it. And that was just their project for the day. So cool. It's just people who are passionate about their city can now take data and in an event and collaborate with others and mm-hmm. say, hey, what can we do with it? What can we build over the course of 8 hours?
It is important also to engage different groups in town. So, for example, we did the event. We call an event and we ask the bunch of nerds we know. At the same time, we call the city and involve them in the process and ask them to attend and ask them to provide a certain data set, to provide a challenge. So we design the challenge with them. We work on that for months before the event, and then also try to have nonprofit organization to have even if you have in town some sponsors that works in this area or like to support this area, that would be also big move because city will see the attention and the work that you will do in this regard. Then, okay, there is a group, there is a good attraction for this website, for example, then now I can use it and I can utilize it and I can see what did they do and maybe present it to council later on and maybe make those prototypes, because at the end of the event, we are building those small projects. It will not be like a production class type of application, but it will be a good prototype to confirm that this idea works and you can do this and that using this type of technology or this type of information. Then you can take it further either by encouraging those entrepreneurs or those startups to have it into a production, or to encourage the city to adapt this technology and use it within the city or produce something similar to the constituents.
You can help people reduce risk in government. And I don't mean in the giant scary way. I mean, we don't know if this plan's going to work. We don't know if we can do that with these data. Mm-hmm. We don't know. Well, let's go find out.
Yep.
And then after a day, the proof of concept
shows. It's low risk.
Yeah, the proof of concept can be used to show you can produce cool results. And I bet you didn't think this was going to happen. And check that out. That's what's happening right there. And then somebody will say, oh, I know that neighborhood. That's what's happening right there. And you say, uh-huh, we just showed you that, mm-hmm. but, you know, without knowing. And suddenly, this will work. And then they can go pursue it knowing it's possible.
Yeah.
In our case, for example, Denton now adapted a couple of our projects that we started with Open Data Day. So we developed those projects. For example, the video Kyle mentioned, it's now on the website.
Awesome.
So the city took it and put it on the website. So if you have no idea on how to use this website, that's the link. So that's one of the products that's been tested and it's now in the website. Again, we did some work with reporting using mobile applications and 311 application. Cool. The city is already using this right now.
Awesome.
And they already have a company in place where they're using this application with them. We also dabbled with a couple of ideas about chatbot and knowing some information, the early website that Kyle mentioned, and it's already now the city is already in contract to do such thing. So once you prove the concept, when they have seen it, once even the city looked into it and say, hey, this is, yes, that works, yes, it is available, maybe we just need to put it in plan for next year or the year after, then it become a reality and city will become stronger.
So these are projects that originated in Denton Open Data Day and have since been adopted by the city?
Yep.
That is amazing. So as Strong Towns, we encourage our readers to obsess about their local governments, just their finances, making sure that with every project that comes across the table, that the city is making sure that they get a return on investment. We're not just approving something because it's shiny and new. With open data, is there a way for the concerned citizen to be able to keep our local government accountable with how they're spending their money? Jesse, I know before we dove into the podcast, you said that it's common for the government to be hesitant to share this because they realize how messy some of their books are.
And even something not quite that dangerous, like I don't want to suggest people aren't keeping their books correctly. I think they may be concerned people will use some small perceived error against the city. But one thing I would say for accountability, don't ride in and think you're going to be the accountant, you know, unless you really are an accountant who does auditing for a living, in which case go nuts. But thinking about, hey, we had four plans. The city had to choose one. Let's make sure we archive all of the plans so we can see in the future which one would have been the best outcome. Did we use the right metrics to evaluate it before it happened? And That was an idea from one of the assistant deans at the UNT libraries who said, I want to keep them all, you know, keep all 10 plans. And that's one way to just to hold accountable, right? That, you know, they make decisions. There mm-hmm. were alternatives, including doing nothing.
Yep.
You can look at the outcomes and compare outcomes among, as long as you can get them to save all the pieces. So that's one thing to keep people accountable. And then I think linking with other sources of data, we're working on some air quality stuff out of Stoke and in one of Habib's pushes is to do some particulate measurement.
Particulate matter, yes.
And so couple that with other data sources. Do some citizen science. Bring in your own data. And I mean, as long as you collect it carefully and whatever. And let's use that to leverage the power of all the data.
The wisdom of the crowd, or what Kyle mentioned already, the co-creation. So it used to be only one-way street. So the government is publishing this data for you. But now with the Open Data Portal, and especially if it's designed to encourage co-creation, now you can actually create something or send your sensor data to public database or repository, then everybody can access. And even if it's not as good as Jesse mentioned, if you have multiple points, mm-hmm. and even if they're not that accurate, you can still have a better information than just guts.
Yeah, my favorite example is in Denton. We've got one high-quality air sensor out at the airport, which is not in the middle of town. And depending which way the wind's blowing, you're going to have very different readings because Dallas is south of us. Well, if the pollution from Dallas is blowing up into Denton, then that's going to be a different reading at the airport, which is west of Denton. But also if it's winds blowing from the west where there's not much except for gas wells, it's going to be different. Well, what if we had lousy sensors all over Denton? The law of large numbers says you're going to get a pretty good picture and it's going to be higher resolution, even if you use crappy sensors. Don't use crappy sensors.
That's the lesson learned.
Yeah. But we also, you know, those information pieces, it's like $300,000 for the air quality sensors they've got out there. It's a lot of money for the super high quality ones. So we're not going to do that. But what if we could use $1,500 sensors?
Yeah.
You know, so.
So for the Open Data Day this year, we will be actually having a visualization or aggregate for data sensors from different citizens and different environmental groups between Denton, Dallas, and other cities to see their data sets and see how to compare it with other areas or compare it on a national level or see it at least in an interactive visualization.
Yeah, that's what gets me most excited about Open Data, Habib, is y'all are able to make these associations from all the data that you're able to access and create a narrative around it. And I imagine that's what's most compelling for the concerned citizen as well. They have access to this data. They're connected with some great peers locally. Maybe they found a technical co-founder, if you will, to help decipher this data. And then they can use your observations to create a narrative around it. Say I've done that, Habib. You know, I went to Open Day today. I'm trying to think of an example of a concern I would have. Maybe
Bike lanes.
That's
your favorite.
The city hires a bike pedestrian coordinator. Theoretically, he or she is uncertain about, you know, where to have the most efficient bike lanes. Low stress networks or maybe down the main corridors. And I want to be able to go to my council person and say, hey, I think this should be the best place to consider putting a demarcated bike lane. I can, of course, have my anecdotes and say, I bike on it. I see my friends bike on it.
Right.
It seems. How did this data pair my anecdotes with a compelling story for my council person?
Let me say a story.
Please.
And I'll say some advantages also for your first question about how can you convince your city to get this. Uh-huh. The story is Strava data. Strava, do you know what is Strava? The application for bicycles. And now this company opens their data sets to cities to use. So you actually just need to send an email. Say, hey, I'm a city, I'm this employee who works in the city, and we're interested in getting the data for users in our cities. Now, this is, again, co-creation because they will send you their data set to show you how many people are going from what area to what area, where is the heat map, if you will. And then you will look at it and say, oh, okay, we don't have a lane here, we don't have a lane there. Maybe we need to have it in this area or that area based on the numbers. So it's not, again, it's based on data, it's not based on just your gut's feeling about, oh, I bike in this route and it should be in that mm-hmm. area. Now, also, cities actually use such technologies to develop sometimes their forecast or where is the need. So they will actually pay a surveyors to go and put counters, and they will install counter once a week. But we're talking, when you take the apps nowadays we are sensors moving. People are like, a bunch of sensors are moving around town, and you can utilize this if you ask them to help you create this information or to send this information in a way. So you will get this information free. This is cost saving. This is higher efficiency for the city.
We don't need to spend tens of thousands of dollars to bring in a consultant to tell us where to put our bike lanes.
Also, the counter is once a time. So you have a counter, let's say in January. It's cold. Not that many people are biking. or you have the counter later in August. It varies. Or even if you have it twice a year. But if you have the application data, or you have this agreement with them to have the data, and not only Strava, you can have multiple applications, and you can see what's in town, who is riding, and what do they use. And then you get much richer information and much better results. And you can build, I think, better plan based on the data you have, which you didn't pay a dime for it.
Yep.
If it rains and this particular street floods, nobody's going to bike on it in the rain. You can correlate daily flows with weather, and you can say, huh, our bike networks suck here and here in the rain without any new data gathering at all.
Last Open Data Day, we had one person who was interested in the bike again, and he was, okay, what do I do with bike information right now? And he found out that the city already installed sensors in the Katy Trail. And I think most cities are doing something like that. And the data is available. So he just pulled that data into a different repository because it wasn't easy to find. And he built a code, and it's available on GitHub right now. Oh, cool. You can do the visualization on it without even going anywhere.
So tell us about GitHub. I don't want to dig too deep into it, but... Because GitHub, of course, tremendously relates to open data and how it can be more accessible for everyone.
And it stresses the importance of having a good data organization, having a good data code book, and having a good data format. Yeah. So yes, Kyle, go.
Tell us a little bit how GitHub relates to open data.
Sure. So if you don't know what GitHub is, it's basically just an online platform for where you can host open source code, right? And this can be code that maybe is just like a scraping tool that's fetching data from someplace. Maybe it's a tool that's cleaning up data, or maybe it's a tool that's visualizing data in some aspect. I mean, it can really be doing anything. One of the reasons why we use GitHub, so we started a community group called Open Denton here in Denton. And we actually have an Open Denton organization on GitHub. And so anyone can contribute. Well, you can submit it to us and then we can put it in there. Contribute your own code to our organization. And so we actually use Open Data, or I'm sorry, GitHub on the Open Denton organization during every Open Data Day. So we'll put those projects, and anyone can see these public projects. They're free to download. You could store data in there if you want to. You can store any of your applications. For example, one of the projects I worked on last year, the year before, was code violations. And so what I was doing was taking...
Tell them what code violations are, because that's going to sound different to different people.
Sure. So we had access to a data set from the city that had to do with code violations. And a code violation is like those community services groups who will go around like and look for, oh, you left your trash cans out on the street, or your grass mattress is too tall, or
so many mattresses on the curb.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a number of different code violations existing. But we had access to this data and that was provided to us. And it was 5 years worth of data, code violation data. And
with locations.
With locations. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with this was that it was terrible location data because it wasn't cleaned up very well. We didn't have a city or a zip code of where it was. We just had just a street address and just the code violation and then the date. There was some other data that didn't really matter, but we did have that. And so we kind of make some assumptions on we assume all of these violations happened in Denton. We ran the data through like a normalizer, so it cleaned up things. So say you had different street names that were maybe like some were capitalized, some were lowercase, some were whatever. And so we kind of normalized all that data. And what we were able to do is actually create lat long points for every single code violation that was in that data set. Once I had that data, I was able – and I wrote all this in Python. I didn't know Python before this, but I learned it during that specific Open Data Day with the help of some collaborators who were there because Garrett, for example, he was the guy who showed up, and he's very Python-friendly, and I had a lot of questions for him throughout the day. But eventually, I was able to clean this data, and with it, I was able to use a tool like Tableau, which is just a data visualization tool, to map out a couple of different views. One view was a actual map view of different zip codes that said what was the worst code violation category per zip code, and what was the zip codes that had the highest number of code violations, or what specific area had the most number of code violations. Turns out, I forget what year it was. One place in town that had the most number of code violations, the highest violation type was trash debris, and it was in front of one of the high schools. So it's just kids are standing out there waiting for the bus or waiting for whatever, and they're just
throwing their trash.
Yeah. Yep. So, and you know, city's getting or writing that up as a violation. So that's like a really simple thing. So now we know, we need to go over to the high school and make sure that we're getting the trash picked up.
And now we don't have to reinvent that code next time because it's already there. Up on GitHub. Yeah. And if you need to get it modified, you've got a good catalog of a cookbook of solutions. Yep. And you know that plugged into the Bloomberg Foundation grant that Denton got. You're supposed to share when you develop a solution. You're supposed to share it. Good. We should share those things and enable. It actually breaks down barriers to sharing data in the first place. We have this pre-built code set that will do X and Y with data if you'll just share the data.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so it's another lever to use to kind of nudge cities toward sharing.
So, fellas, you all shared some great wisdom this evening, 9 p.m. at Stoke Denton. To wrap up, folk hopefully have a good understanding about what Open Data Day is, why open data matters. To wrap up, I'd love for each of you to share your own success story in your mind about why open data is not only so important on a national level, but why it matters so much about why it matters here in Denton and why it can matter in other people's communities.
I'll start with, you know, over the course of this recording, I mean, we've mentioned a number of projects that have just kind of sprouted up purely out of interest, right? Like there was an individual in need from someone who identified a problem, and they found a couple of people who also thought that was a problem and wanted to fix it. And so, you know, while we've had a number of these things happen in Denton specifically, you know, we had the Vote Denton, we had Listen Denton, we had a couple of other campaigns, Open Denton in general, who just every year we do something and we try and get together and we're always trying to find new projects. I think it's for us, I'm proud that we live in a community of collaborative people who want to use data for good. And I think that, you know, Denton is a great place for people to do that. And I'm honestly super proud of the people in the room we have right now who are always trying to contribute to the community and make it better. So I think in that itself is a success story.
I think I will add to the personal part that also there is a need from people. There is a need from cities. There is a need also from nonprofit organization. And you will never know that existed if you don't have this type of gathering, if you don't have this type of hackathons happening, if you don't have maybe a champion to go around and rally this and ask people to do it and maybe find the space and do all the logistics just to get them all together and do the event. And once you have this in place, you will be surprised what happened. And you will be surprised with the wealth and the knowledge and even the capabilities that people will bring to the table for free.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we had also City of Louisville with us, and they throw at me a challenge, and I was, I don't know, how are we going to do this? But they came with a hard disk of more than 60 gigs of high-definition street pictures.
And they have looking down onto the street pictures. It was cameras downward-facing.
Mm.
And they actually have this project for a specific thing, but they thought we can do more with it, but the city doesn't have the resources right now, or maybe cannot allocate it at this time to explore this data set. So what can we do with it? And can we identify road conditions? And they had another project, can we identify manholes, for example? And we have four guys came together at that time. They went, oh, this is cool. I love to do this. And none of them
have
done
this. They're all from Project 205. That's a company.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Project 202.
202, sorry. Yeah. I thought it was 205.
And none of them have maybe done that before, as far as I understood from them. And they said, oh, that's awesome. Let's do it.
Wow.
And in a matter of less than 4 hours, they have a good understanding of the data set. They run machine learning on it. They identified the manhole, I think, with 90-something percent accuracy. And they built all this.
And they could distinguish seams in the concrete from cracks in the concrete.
Oh, my goodness.
With AI.
And if it's a concrete or asphalt. And different things. And they said, if you give us more time or if you want to continue this, we can develop it further. So now the ball is in the city court.
Yep.
What are you going to do with it? Are you going to contact those or maybe give an incentive or try to support this type of effort or at least take back that results home and make sure that by next year or sometimes you will develop an application using this type of information? We did similar things with another hackathon with the Waze dataset. So North Texas Council of Government was generous enough to give us access to Waze reporting for DFW areas for 30 days. They said, can you do anything with this? We are not doing right now. I have no idea. Of course, we get into that event and we have the winner at that time. Who's a professor at UNT, he's a visiting scholar. And he came in and he tried to learn different new tools like Kyle did. And then
Jesse actually introduced him to the
QGIS and some other data tools. But yeah, QGIS is a great open source GIS package. It's quite full featured, very Python friendly. And it plays nice with PostGIS, which is sort of the tool that I use. So it's a fantastic tool.
Cool.
QGIS.org.
At the end of the day, he managed to do a prediction model on traffic patterns based on certain aspects within the traffic with 73, I think, percent of accuracy level in less than 4 hours and presented to the team. We were blown away.
We honestly had no expectation of or didn't know what to expect from this presentation. But when you get up there, the best thing about his presentation was that this guy had receipts, right? he showed along the way like his working progress towards this prediction model, how he applied it to machine learning algorithms, and what the outcome was, and what the outcome of his code was, that he took a month's worth of Waze data, traffic data, boiled it down into a prediction model that you could implement inside of a city. For example, 7 out of 10 times it could predict when a traffic accident was going to happen. Right. So what it does is it looks for serious traffic accidents and it looks for a 30-minute window before that and is modeling a pattern to see what are the things that are happening that leads up to that event. And so this means that if a city were to actually deploy this model, continue developing it a little bit more, but deploy this model, they could 70% of the time accurately send out public safety officers to an area where they can see traffic is starting to build up or these events are starting to occur. And so if either they can get there before an event occurred or at least soon after a traffic event occurred. And when this scholar or this professor had presented his research, we were just, wow, that he did this in 6 hours?
Okay. Even less. He only started in the last 3 hours. And he was, I will focus. I'll do something. Just be with me. And he asked me to do a small code. And I was just trying to do it. And he was done with his part.
Yeah.
Okay. So you never know what type of people live, what skill set they can provide you, unless you have those type of event, unless you have this gathering, unless you have this environment, and encourage more and more. I have so many stories to say, but even for academic person like me, I'm publishing this information, I'm writing about the details, maybe teaching some of those and adding it to classes and rally this around UNT to add it as in class project or in class activities, or even come and attend the event so you can learn or you can share some of the things that you can build. So once you have this type of events, you will be able to get the benefits of having this prototype of understanding what can you do with the data set you have.
Oh, and imagine it gives people a sense of ownership in the city too. It's like, it's not just ideas and anecdotes, like with the help of Kyle, Habib, and Jesse, whomever, like actually put together a prototype that people are vibing with, and hopefully the city as well. Jesse, what about you?
So Habib gave some great examples, and I was going to use the Project 202. I was going to say 205 because I'm from Alabama, so 205 is an area code. I just wrote. The thing that I think is the outcome that is in some ways surprising is everybody in this room is kind of a nexus for nerds, right? We all know a bunch of nerds. We all know each other, and you know how to kind of bring some people in. But what you don't know is the limits of your network. Who's outside of that, who is still awesome and can come in and contribute in ways that are shocking or amazing or just unexpected. And so for me, we bring people in every year. You know, we had 90 people register last year, and each year you get new pockets of people, so Denton's got two schools of library and information science, and so you get lots of grad students who come in who in some cases are kind of badly unprepared for like what this is going to be like. And for some cases they're like, I can do this thing really well. And now you've got a new system of social relationships that make both these events better because you pull together disparate groups of unusual and interlocking skill sets, and you actually make the social fabric better. Yeah. You actually improve people who, I mean, some of those grad students are going to, you know, they're transient, they're going to move on. But the people who are here every year and come in, I only see online for, you know, months at a time. But then when we drop back into Open Data Day or they come to one of the coffees or whatever, you've got a friendship that's built upon doing something good. Mm-hmm. And you ask them to do something good, and people feel great when they get to do something they're good at and contribute.
Yeah.
And so people are much more likely to self-select into these events, and you get some, I mean, and I always tell the story about Nancy, you know, who's a grandmother who writes apps for her kids, grandkids. She used to program mainframes, and now she programs apps for her kids, for her grandkids. And she, of course, was, you know, no slouch at Open Data Day, right? Duh. And so you bring in, like, I would never have met Nancy. Mm-hmm. Now I think Nancy's awesome. And you end up learning a lot about your town, and people, if you do it right, people decide you're worth their time. Yeah. Your event is worth their mm-hmm. time. And then the city pays attention because here's a bunch of people who care enough to do something useful. Yeah. And what they produced is impressive in whatever, you know, whether it's the videos of how to use the data site, the website, or it's the actual outcomes of, hey, we can predict traffic accidents. And they pay attention to you because you're doing something that is both, it looks like voters, because it is, mm-hmm. but also it looks like useful outcomes. Yeah. So
beautiful. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate each of you for gathering this evening, sharing your wisdom with us. Hopefully people are compelled to start their own Open Data Day. And if not going with the big event, at least just start the conversation locally. I think they got Kyle here and the whole crew. They all do little doc club. What do y'all do? Kind of like a mini, not a mini Open Data Day, but there's ways to at least start to foster this conversation. You don't have to do the whole shebang first year.
Yeah.
What's some ways we can just start small, just to start adding this incrementally?
It's all about being consistent. And so Techmill, the nonprofit we're all a part of, which actually Jesse and Habib are both new board members to Techmill.
Congrats.
So we started a couple of events that are biweekly. So we have Little Doc, which is Little D Open Coffee Club, and that's every other Tuesday at 8 a.m. Jesse, they'll go set up at West Oak, and people just join and they talk in the morning about what's going on in the world, recent technology, things like that. We also do APIs and IPAs, so that's on Wednesday evenings on opposite weeks of Little Doc. So, for example, if you work in the morning, but instead you want to go get a drink in the evening, That's another similar thing we can go talk about. And then also once a month, we do something called Open Hack, where everyone just meets up. And it's all about contributing to open source projects. Maybe you want to learn how to code. Maybe you want to get involved in open source. Maybe you just want to get involved with your local tech community. We just put it on the calendar and people show up. And it's just really important to be consistent so people always know where you're at. And honestly, just be giving. Our mantra is we're a give first community, where you should always want to give before you expect anything in return. Because whenever you eventually need something, you're going to get that back tenfold. So always just be willing to give of yourself and your experience to support your community.
It's inspiring, Kyle.
Thanks.
Well, fellas, if listeners want to learn more about you online, connect with all the great work you guys are doing, where can folk find you?
You can, let's see, we're on the internet at techmill.co. If you want to learn more about Open Data Day, you can go to www.dfwopendatoday.com. And we have a couple of events.
And there's opendatoday.org for the international.
Opendatoday.org, that's right, for the international event. Also, if you're just around town and you want to hang out at one of our meetups, you can find us on meetup.com/techmilldinton. And feel free to come hang out with us one day.
Thank you, pals.
No problem.
Talk soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes. And we will chat next week. See ya.